Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon and welcome to Aware. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. A while ago, I think it was starting back in 1998, I started interviewing one of my spiritual teachers on the radio, Michael Tamora, and he has been with me ever since. You know, I looked back and I was doing some research as to when I started the show and so forth, and we were doing the astrological chart of when I started the show back in 1998 on this station called KYPA, and Michael was one of my first guests. And then when I started the show here at KPFK, he was one of my first guests. He was my first guest. And there have been various events in my life where he was there for the presence of my birth of my child. In these inaugural things in my life, Michael Tamora has been there with me. And I am so, so, so honored with the fact that he is here with me today. And I will tell you why. What you're about to hear might challenge your belief systems. It might seem unbelievable at times. It might light you up in certain ways, because what we're going to be talking about today is life and death from a perspective of a man who almost died about 2 weeks ago. This is a true story, and Michael's going to be joining us in just a minute. But for those who have not heard Michael before, Michael Tamora, he is an author of a book called You Are the Answer. And it's a very, very wonderful book about one of the most true books that I have read on finding your purpose in life inside of yourself and not searching outside of you, because that's what we commonly do, is look everywhere else for our answers, and they're most commonly right inside our hearts. And Michael Tamora has been teaching. He's as a healer and a very, very gifted psychic for almost 37 years. In my opinion, he's like a mystic walking among us, and I feel very, very fortunate to have been a part of his lectures and his books and so forth, and my time with he and his wife has been spectacular to me. It kind of sounds like an obituary, doesn't it? But guess what? Michael did just suffer a very severe heart attack 2 weeks ago, and he's joining us today to laugh about it, to share with us his experiences, because it is truly a phenomenal story, and I am so, so honored that Michael is joining us today. I've never meant this so much, but I'm very, very happy you're on the line with us today, Michael. Welcome to the Aware Show.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. That brings a whole new meaning to things now, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Well, now, I don't obviously mean to make light of the situation, and I had mentioned earlier on the show that some people might kind of get lit up by our conversation today, because it is not a laughing matter. I mean, my mother went through a heart attack 6 months ago, and we were not laughing. And I was stuck for quite a while, and obviously, you know, she was moving through her experiences as well.
Exactly.
Can you explain to us what exactly happened?
Yes. Well, it's been an amazing experience, and it was July 11th, 2 days before my wife, Raphael, and my 15th anniversary, and 3 days before my 53rd birthday. I tend to do these things right around my birthday time.
Ah, and in clusters, okay.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the most amazing birthday celebrations that I've ever had.
It's a whole new meaning to birthday.
Exactly,
huh?
A rebirthday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because months ago when Raphael said, gee, you know, we usually have a big birthday celebration party and invite lots of people, and what would you like to have your birthday this year, and all of those kinds of things. And months ago I says, this year, you know, I want the calendar cleared. I don't want to have a party. Don't organize anything, please.
Hmm.
And so she was very surprised and said, gee, that's not like you. And I says, well, I don't know why, but I just have to, it needs to be quiet. And so July 11th, I wake up in the morning, and I woke up feeling really blissful. It's really joyous. And Raphael was already up and kind of doing her morning routine and hearing the sounds and, you know, the dog barking and everything. I was just lying in bed, and I was kind of meditating and looking at things and enjoying what a wonderful space I was in. And so then after, 15 minutes or so of that, I decided I better get going. And I got out of bed, and as I started to, you know, take showers and all my morning stuff, I noticed a little knot in the back of my shoulder, between my shoulder blades on my back. And my first thought was, gee, it's a little, got a kink there, and maybe I need to go see a chiropractor soon. And so then, really rapidly, the knot became bigger and bigger and bigger, and very tense and very tight and painful. And then it started to spread out into my chest, and then it went kind of down one side and down my right arm. And so I'm thinking, oh yeah, about my heart and things. But it normally goes down the left arm. First went down the right arm, and then that kind of backed off, and then it went down the left arm and up the head and all kinds of things. And at first I couldn't quite discern how much of it was physical and how much of it was just, you know, I'm so aware of energy that it's sometimes very difficult for me to discern how, you know, how much of this is kind of a physical situation that I need to take care of. And so this got worse and worse very rapidly, and it got to the point where I'm quite a bit in pain. And so Raphael was concerned. She saw something was going on, came and asked if, you know, what was going on. And I told her, and she's the first one. He says, are you having a heart attack? And I says, well, I don't think so. I mean, you know, if you've never had one, even though I used to be a licensed vocational nurse in my, you know, teens and early 20s.
You'd think you would know.
Yeah, but everything I've ever heard and studied about was one of the characteristic symptoms was the person always says it feels like an elephant sitting on my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely, when you're in that state, it's kind of a funny mental state where I'm musing, well, what would it feel like if an elephant were sitting on my chest? And all I could see was, you know, a squished me.
Yeah.
And so, gee, I wouldn't have any feelings at that point. And so I'm kind of laughing to myself in spite of the pain. And so I says, well, why don't you give me a healing? And I asked Raphael if she would give me a healing. Of course, she immediately sat down to start to take a look and energetically and start to give me a healing. And after about 15 minutes, 20 minutes of her healing, it seemed like it was starting to back off quite a bit. And I go, oh, okay, so it must have been some energy. And I knew there was a lot of Kundalini energy going in me, and so it was opening up new avenues. And so then I start to go through the rest of, you know, getting ready, because I had people waiting for me at the office in town, which is like a 4 or 5 minute drive from home. And so then I was running a little late and going, okay, well, I can still make it. And then the pain came back triple, quadruple. It was, you know, pretty excruciating. But still didn't feel like the heart. It just felt, I don't know what it felt. Most of it felt like it was in my back. So Raphael continued to provide some healing, and that kind of maintained things. And then it got so bad that it was beyond, you know, thinking about anything. And so I says, I need to go outside. I need to get into the sunlight. And so I went into the backyard. I just couldn't be around anybody, any energy. And I went back to the backyard, and it was a beautiful, just glorious day. And I'm walking around, and the only thing I could do physically was to make sounds. I toned and chanted kind of a, you know, whatever sound, and that seemed to help move things along. And then it got to this point of tremendous excruciating pain and intensity of agony that I'm having my first consideration of maybe I should call 911 or I should go to the hospital. And I got a total no, not yet. And I thought, okay.
When you said you got that, that means that's what you, that's the first thought that came into your head?
Yes, my thought that came to me was maybe I should go to the hospital, and I just got a total, it's not a thought, it was a total knowing that no, it's not right yet. It's you know, I needed to go through something. And so I couldn't disrupt this by going to the hospital or anything.
At this point, did any thoughts of death start entering your mind that you feel like you're going to die?
Well, not really in that sense, because I live with death all the time.
Explain that one.
Yeah. So that's always there, but it's not in the sense of, oh, no, I'm going to die. It was kind of the other, there was an inkling of, there's an impulse that comes up where you want to die. You know, it's a natural reaction of this is too painful. You know, I got to get out of this type mm-hmm. of a level, which is much more, I want to die, not I don't want to die.
Hmm.
And so that was happening on a more body survival level. In terms of healing, it's only that which is whole can restore something or someone that's divided back into wholeness. And so in order to heal ourselves or others or the world at large, we have to be able to enter into that wholeness, into that oneness, in order to bring about this healing. And so, obviously, there's all kinds of divisions happening at this point in such pain. And I was aware of the dichotomy of this absolutely glorious day in Mount Shasta, in all this greenery. You know, I'm just surrounded by forests and mountains and everything. And it's a pristine day and beautiful air and everything and sunlight. And here I'm in this excruciating agony on a physical level. And so what came to me at that point, it seems like there was no, you know, there had to be some kind of choice that I had to make. But I wasn't sure at the point, what were my choices? And generally, you know, pain, fear, and survival dictate the flight or fight situation. It dictates you got to conquer this and make it out of this or get out of this in order to survive. Get out of Dodge and save yourself. Or it's between, you know, surviving and perishing. And so I knew that that's part of all to do with survival. But I also was very aware, very much experiencing on the more out-of-the-body level the continuity of life and that life continues regardless of whether you survive the physical body or its conditions. Life goes on whether you're in pain or in bliss. Life goes on whether you're imprisoned or free, whether you're miserable or happy. So I'm looking at all this about life in the midst of this, and I go, okay, I need to come up with a choice. I need to make a decision. And so I'm going through all that, and finally I realize, okay, generally most of us in this kind of a situation make those decisions of, you know, I got to get out of this, please stop this, or let me go, or, you know, I want to die, or whatever. It becomes one of denying life or overcoming it, you know, either conquering life or denying it. And I decided I didn't want to do either. And what can I do? So I decided, life goes on, so I'm going to choose it. I'm going to choose to totally have life, regardless of whether my physical body dies or my physical body is incapacitated or disabled or damaged in some way or another. regardless of how bad the pain is, I decided I'll choose to have life. I'll choose to have the totality of life. And at that point, I was so totally, it's such a dichotomy because the body was in the worst of its agony. And myself as the spirit consciousness was in this blazing light. And I was totally aware of being surrounded by my guides, surrounded by masters of healing, surrounded by masters of wisdom in spirit and angels. I was just surrounded. Except it was a unique experience because they all stepped back. When I was making that decision, every one of the beings, tremendous beings of light and wisdom and healing, who are enormously powerful, capable, all step back a step. That's kind of what it seemed like.
What do you attribute that to?
This is very similar to when Jesus was on the cross. One of the translations in the Bible is he goes, my brothers, why have thou forsaken me? And what that was about, he's talking, his brothers are the masters, the brilliant beings that guide and help and heal and teach. I was flashing on that at that moment when I saw them backing up, because in times of a real test for the soul, it's a choice we make prior to coming into our incarnation and things. We say, you know, we want to pass the exam, so to speak. We're studying hard. We're working hard to learn certain things, and so then we need to finish the final exam, so to speak. We need to finish the test that we asked to be given so that we could really solidify, we can really establish a level of consciousness and energy, power, whatever it is we're working on, to be part of our own being. And so we don't want that taken away. And so all these masters know that, and my guides know that. And so when the time came, I felt the total support of them, but they weren't going to touch me. They weren't going to lift a finger. They weren't going to interfere in any way, shape, or form. They were completely giving me this circle, this sphere of space to go through what I needed to go through and to make a decision that came from my innermost being, that's not from somebody said so, somebody, you know, did it for you, somebody, you know, pushed you in that direction. No, they totally created a safe space for me to be able to make the choice that I would make as a soul. And when I made that choice, everything changed. I was in this brilliant golden light, and even though my body was still doubled over in agony on the ground, on the yard, I knew I had taken that step. And once that happened, I was able to come into my body a little bit more and manage the pain a lot better. And I wasn't fighting it as much and kind of drowning in it. And so now the pain is going on, but it's going on around me. And I'm able to get into better communication with my body. And I go, okay, next step. Now I can take my next step and move forward in my healing.
So you chose life.
Yes.
And that's when all this started shifting for you.
It was like a total different life. I entered into a whole new consciousness and a whole new space of living. And so right after that, I decided, I'm going to pray and go into much more deeply and more profoundly than I have ever gone in my heart of hearts. And I asked God, okay, now I'm ready. I'm willing to open my heart and release whatever is divided in there, whatever I haven't come across yet and needs to go. And so I opened my heart to that. And the next thing that happened, here on a bodily level, I'm doubled over in pain, and my face is practically on the grass. And my heart opens, and Mother Earth, that's the best way I can describe it, is Mother Earth, the beingness that is the Earth, opened up and just swallowed everything that came out of my heart. I can see this dark flow of stuff that just came out from the depth of my heart just got swallowed into the earth. And then the earth closed up, and that was that. And after that, I was able to get up. I can stand up and I go, okay, I took a deep breath and go, all right, I can move forward now. And again, the comedy is spiced through all of this.
I was just, I was trying to be respectful, but is this like a normal occurrence for you?
Yeah.
Oh, the earth opened up, swallowed my pain. Now I can go have some eggs.
Yeah. So my next thing is, oh, you know, I had asked, I was in so much pain, I asked Raphael, would you please call the office? And these people are there from Israel waiting for me to have a session and to go have a meeting afterwards and about various things. And I said, I asked them to maybe postpone the session 2 hours so that I can have a little chance to, you know, get it together. And so here I'm still kind of counting. I'm not, you know, letting go of my commitment to be there for them. And so I'm going back into the house, and I was able to walk up the flight of stairs up to the deck and go into the back of the house looking for Raphael. And so I asked her, would you take me?
You were doing all that alone?
Yes.
Okay.
And that part, I had to kind of do it alone. And then I was ready to take my next step. And so I asked her, you know, I don't feel like driving. I'm not sure if I can drive very well, so could you take me to the office? And, of course, Raphael's, you know, really just, she must have been going through so much then. And she's going, okay. And she was very, very gentle, and she completely 150% supportive. And she says, okay, I'll drive you wherever you want to go. So we go, and so it was so cute. We're halfway to the office. It only takes, you know, 4 or 5 minutes drive to there. And then she just gingerly goes, you know, why don't we just swing by the hospital on the way?
I'm waiting for Raphael's next book, The Wife of a Healer.
So that was so fun. You know, it's just like, oh, yeah, by the way, we'll stop by the hospital on the way to your office, and it'll take a couple of minutes, and, you know, you can get checked out, and how about that? And as soon as she said that, I got the green light. Literally, it was like looking at the green light. Until then, I was not to go to the hospital. And at that point, I got green light, yes, go to the hospital. I said, okay, sure, let's swing by the hospital. So we go drive to the hospital, and the amusing part, again, I've worked as a LVN in hospitals for a few years, but way back, but I've never, ever been a patient in a hospital. And
never.
So we generally knew where the hospital was, so we got there. And then Raphael says, okay, which building, you know, do we go in the front door? Do we go to the outpatient clinic? Do we go to the emergency ward? And the thoughts I was having was, gee, knowing hospitals from the inside, no matter where you go, you have to sit in the hallway, you have to sit in the reception, you have to fill out forms.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going, I don't feel like doing that.
I mean, you've been to, you know, John of God in Brazil and had psychic surgeries with no anesthesia. I mean, you've done that, but you've never gone to an American hospital.
No, not
as a sick person. Right. Okay.
I've been to an outpatient clinic for like a blood test or something like that, but
right.
Never for a hospital for treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going, you know, the emergency room is the only place I know where they usually take you right away without an appointment. So that was my thinking at that point, which is hilarious.
What's more hilarious is what the nurse said when you got there.
Yeah, when we got there, well, getting into the emergency room was a comedy routine because we never went in, you know, the emergency room from the door. It's just like at ER, you know, on TV. So we drive up, but, you know, this is the way the ambulance comes in. So I says, well, you can't park here. You know, you'll block the ambulance thing. So you have to go park somewhere. And Raphael goes, okay, I'll go park, and you go in. So she drops me off at the door. Well, I didn't realize emergency doors are locked from the inside. It's controlled from the inside, so not anybody can just walk in off the street. And so I'm waving like the, you know, Queen Elizabeth on a motorcade. I'm waving and smiling at the people inside.
Having a heart attack, excuse
yeah.
me. Heart attack.
Had
here.
I known, I should have been clutching at my chest and you know, frothing at the mouth, then they would have come running out. But they're looking at me, and it doesn't kind of fit the picture, right? Generally, the ambulance crew calls in and, okay, we're almost there. They're all prepared. It's an emergency. Boom, the door opens. Everybody gets gurneyed in and, you know, the whole bit. But no, you don't just walk in and knock on the emergency room door and says, hi. And so about two or three people are stopped their work and they're looking at me and kind of trying to figure out who is he and what does he want. And so then Raphael comes running up and pointing and looking a little bit more like an emergency, and they come running out, open the door, and let us in. And so then we're walking in, which is not a usual thing to do in an emergency. So the receptionist is very nice, and she says, oh, you know, what can I do for you? And Raphael says, well, my husband's having, a severe chest pains and needs to be looked at by a doctor. And she goes, oh, okay, and which one's your husband? And she points to me, and I says, hi. And she goes, oh, we'll get a triage nurse right away. So, and then the receptionist says, to Raphael, do you want to take care of the insurance papers and all that? And Raphael says, I'll take care of all of that. So they go away. The triage nurse comes out and says, who's the one with a problem? And I says, oh, I'm the one with a problem. And she goes, what seems to be your problem? And I says, well, I've had this chest pain, back pain thing going on. And she says, well, okay, where is it? And I kind of described it to her briefly. And she says, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad is it? And I'm sitting there. I'm not trying to be facetious. I'm just standing there going, I have no reference on what 1 is and what 10 is in the scale of pain. And so she saw my, you know, hesitation. She says, well, 10 is like an elephant sitting on your chest.
Back to the elephant.
Back to the elephant. The elephant keeps on coming up. And so I'm kind of laughing to myself of, but
was
who
it a
knows
pink
what
elephant?
An elephant sitting on your chest feels like. And so she's kind of, you know, trying to make it clearer for me. And she goes, well, 10 would be the most excruciating pain you've ever experienced in your life, and 1 would be just a slight pain. And I go, oh, well, you know, an hour or two ago, I was in the most excruciating pain I've ever experienced in my life. But now I would say it's about, compared to that, now it's like 3. And so she goes, oh, 3. So she turns around and yells out into the emergency room, we got another chest pain. And she says, you're the 4th chest pain to walk in, arrive here in the last less than 30 minutes.
Hmm.
And so that was, you know, this is a small town.
But I doubt anybody was walking in like you.
Yeah,
were.
I don't know how they came in.
Yeah.
So it was another chest pain. And she goes, follow me. And we're walking into the ER examination room. And the doctor comes out, and very wonderful person. And she goes, asks the same questions, you know, 1 to 10, how bad's your pain, and have a seat here on the edge of this examination table. And so we're talking away, and she orders some, you know, things to other people around, and they start to work around me. And she goes, I said, well, I think, as I told the nurse, I think it's about 3 now, maybe 2.5. And so she goes, so it's not that painful. And I says, well, compared to how it was before. And then she gets a little alarmed. She says, well, how long have you been having this? And I realized I had no concept of time. I didn't know if it was the afternoon, the morning, you know, anything yet. And so I asked her, what time is it now? And she goes, it's 12:30. And I go, wow, you know, this started at like little before 8:30.
Wow.
And then she gets very alarmed, and she says, lie down here, and she got the EKG on me. And after that, it was like all over for a while, where she starts giving instructions to all the nurses, and I'm getting IVs up the kazoo, and everything's going on around me. And she comes, she makes a phone call to some other hospital and calls for an ambulance and crew to pick me up right away, and this and that, and she's talking apparently to some other doctor, and then she comes back after everything's done that she could do, and she ordered some more medication, and she explained to me that she says, well, she goes, I've never, ever seen a person in the middle of a severe heart attack that's so calm and can hold a conversation and look normal. she says, that really threw me. And she says, you are in the middle of a severe heart attack.
Wow.
And she shows me the cardiac monitor. And she says, see, that's called the tombstone. and the how it blips, you know, and it goes straight. Well, the part that's supposed to go straight looks just like a huge tombstone, you know, that classic tombstone shape. And she says, when you see that, there's no question, there's no doubt, there's no ifs or ands or buts about it. This is a heart attack.
That is such an odd terminology.
I know. In fact, the terminology heart attack is strange. You know, it's
an
what is a heart attack? And so another aspect of things that start to open up for me in the midst of all this is you hear the statistics all the time. You turn on a TV or a documentary or whatever, health program, book, magazine. In America especially, it's the number one killer, right? Mm. Heart disease causes more deaths in Americans than any other disease. And so here in my healing work, I've worked with people with numbers, great numbers of people who've had cancer, but very few who had heart disease. And so here I'm going, this is part of it, is I have to learn. It's when you start to not have many problems of your own, when you don't have much karma remaining as a soul, then more and more your awareness goes to the global, goes to a larger context. And I'm going, here in this country, heart problem is the number one problem.
Mm.
And it's the number one cause of death amongst diseases. So I thought, and I really haven't paid that much attention to that. And so I needed to look at this and get to some awareness and of what causes one to have heart trouble.
The pain of the emotional pain.
Yes, but also what causes that? It's if you research any kind of heart, you know, alternative heart healing, it always starts with nutrition, right? Even medical levels, you should cut out fats and heavy meats and alcohol and stop smoking and all of those kind of things. The first thing that a doctor will tell you on how to start to take care of yourself if you have heart illness. It didn't work for me.
Because you didn't do any of those things.
No, because the funny thing is everybody, all the medical staff from the emergency room to the, you know, the cardiologist at the bigger city hospital that I got taken to an hour and a half away, and to the nurses that took care of me, every single person was phenomenal. But I'm listening to their conversations about me in the hallway, and they're going, he's so young looking, and he looks so healthy, and he's a vegan vegetarian. He doesn't smoke. He doesn't drink.
Doesn't fit the model.
It doesn't fit the model. Even the cardiologist says, well, you know, the only thing I can think of here is it was an accident.
at any point, does when the medical personnel was going through, rushing around you, and there wasn't a lot of communication being given to you, and then when you saw the spikes on the EKG, at any point did you slip back into that place of fear because of the external circumstances?
Well, the fear was coming on a more bodily level. You know, a survival and the body going, it's a normal body reaction that happens. But I was aware of that. And I was also aware of all the childhood things, it had less to do with that medical situation happening. More of that had to do with being born and being in a hospital and not having any communication from people and being left in a, you know, incubator or whatever for a long period of time and no communication, no contact, nobody's saying anything, you know, and the total ignoring of that as a being, you're a full-grown being just because the baby body is not able to have a full verbal conversation doesn't mean you're not able to have a, you know, full conversation. And so all of that was coming out during this whole time. And so when you have your awareness when things are happening, you'll realize, the actual stronger, more intense emotional part of your experience isn't what's happening right now, but what's happening right now is bringing out so much of that from the past. And so this is something that I was very, you know, not continuously aware of, but I was very cognizant of on and off throughout mm-hmm. this whole experience. And sometimes it was teenagehood stuff, sometimes it was babyhood stuff.
Right.
And the body becomes like a child, you know, body becomes like a baby and says, wah, wah.
Right, absolutely. You know, I need to remind my listeners that my guest is Michael Tamora, and we are talking about his experience of a very severe heart attack he suffered just a couple of weeks ago, and he is joining us to, thank God he's joining us to share this experience with people. And what we're doing here is really reframing what it means to be in the state of pain and reframing fear. I mean, we've been getting calls from medical professional personnel saying, you know, love the show, but don't wait so long. And I mean, there's a lot of people that are calling in and expressing their concerns. But the what we're doing here is we're just reframing the situation that Michael's experience was specifically about reframing fear. So please continue with your story. So now the nurse and everybody's around you, and they ordered an ambulance apparently to get you to the next hospital.
Yes, and it took an hour and 15 minutes for them to arrive. And again, this is the humorous part of I'm lying there with tubes and you know wires and everything, and I'm going, isn't it interesting? Here I am in the emergency room, and on the way in, I saw three ambulances parked right in front of the emergency room, and this is where ambulances kind of come and go as a regular place. And yet, it took an hour and 15 minutes for ambulance and crew to arrive, mainly because they had to come from the other hospital to pick me up. And it was, a specialized crew with specialized equipment to make sure I made it from, you know, the emergency ward in one city to the cardiac catheterization lab. That's all been, you know, prepped and ready for me to receive me on the other side. And since I was in some ways doing well in responding to the medication and stuff, I guess they didn't have to send a helicopter or anything like that. They just said, okay, let's get the best equipment and the crew. And the amazing thing, you know, in response to the fear part too, even when the doctor and the nurses and all the other people were running around doing their job, I felt so much in spirit, so much at one. Again, when you enter into that oneness of being, oneness of spirit, it doesn't matter, you know, so often when I'm communicating with people who are spiritual seekers or who are spiritual healers especially, or those who are holistic in their lifestyle and or holistic healers, there's a kind of an antagonism and opposition to medical intervention. And on the other side, when I'm speaking with people who are rigidly allopathic contained in that level might have opposition to, you know, spiritual or divine intervention.
Mm-hmm,
But when you're in oneness, there's no divisions like that. Prayer can manifest its healing power through a medical procedure, through a medication, through organic nutrients, through a kind word or a touch. It manifests in any channel it's available.
As you said to me earlier, everything is spirit.
Everything is spirit, yes. And so if you start to go, well, I don't believe in allopathic medicine, well, that's a real disservice to yourself, because it may not be the procedure of choice for certain people at certain times. For certain people, without it, they just, you know, okay, better luck next lifetime. And so it's you still have a choice, but it's not a bad thing. And yes, when you get to the level of consciousness where you can be a breatharian, you could live on just prana alone, great. Don't take medicines. You know, that's going to upset the system and everything. It's not going to be helpful for you. But on the other hand, if you're not able to repair a clogged artery by yourself or just through meditation, if it's happening right now, and the angel shows up as a doctor or a paramedic, you know, who am I to just go, okay, no, I think I'll wait for the next angel.
Right. Or I think I'll just do this by myself. Yeah.
And so, and the amazing thing, when I was in the worst of the worst situation in the backyard of my house, out of nowhere, our gardener shows up. I'm doubled over, and I'm in deep prayer, and the gardener shows up and says, "Oh, hi, Mr. Tamara." And so for a moment, I was able to sit up and go, "Oh, hi, John, you know, nice to see you." And I said, "Oh, my wife, you can go to the front door, you know, and talk to Raphael." And that's about as much as I can do.
He didn't notice?
Well, he did. And the amazing, and he mentioned his concern to Raphael when he talked to her, and she says, "Yes, I'm aware of it." And so then what it turns out to be later on, comes back after everything was, you know, few days later, and then he explains he's a veteran EMT, emergency medical technician.
Another angel.
He was a paramedic for years before he became a gardener. And so he says,
of course that would be your gardener.
Exactly. And so if I had needed it at that moment, if I had collapsed or, you know, just went into, you know, a coma or whatever, he would have been right there. He would have found me and took care of it. So this is the way spirit works. It's an amazing thing. At every turn, at every point, I was taken care of. And not only was I taken care of, but my choices were opening up each step of the way. When I got to the other city in the
ambulance. Yes, you have to.
Right.
Oh, and we only have like 20 minutes left, but we're going to expend time here. Okay, so we're expanding time. So you have
on the ambulance ride. It was great because I had a trainee as the main caretaker, the person who was monitoring me in the back of the ambulance with me, and the other two paramedics were on the front. And he was preparing for his final exams for his paramedic training.
Oh, yeah.
And I always get that. Raphael and I always joke that we always get trainees. It doesn't matter if we're going in a toll booth through a toll booth at the, you know, freeway or going on a white water rafting trip. We always get, this is the first day on the job.
I was saying that earlier in the show, because you help people bridge to that next growth period in their lives.
Yeah, I love that. And I so enjoyed having this young man. He was bright. He was capable. I totally trusted him. And he was, you know, really sweating it out at one point where he's making sure he doesn't want to flunk his test.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to keep this guy alive. So we had a great rapport. And in the middle of it, about halfway through this mountain, you know, driving down the mountain and everything on turns, and I'm a little bit nauseous and everything, but I'm fairly stable, and he's very gentle, and he's asking me, you know, where are you at this level and so forth. And at one point, something happened. I got very, very light. And then I found myself totally out of my body, completely in the light. It's a very different level of light, and I'm faced with this whole arc of celestial beings, and just in this incredible peace, incredible love, incredible contentment, or I don't know even what words to use, bliss, and beautiful, beautiful, beautiful light. And I'm in this, bathed in this light, and then one of the angels comes forward, and she had a female, you know, valence and everything, just the most beautiful person, and she smiles and says, "Not yet, it's not your time yet," and like a mother to a child, you know, going, "Now, don't be in such a hurry here." You have to go back over there. And of course, I knew it wasn't my time. I knew it was not my time.
You knew that as a soul.
Die on that level. So I says, yes, I know. And she's kind of smiling at me. And she had her hands on my chest, right in my heart, over my heart, and gently pushed me back all the way down to my body, back in the ambulance. And as I got into the body as much as I could at that point, the EMT, the young man, is saying, "Ah, it's stabilized now."
Mm.
And so whatever was happening there, I wasn't aware of. But and then after that, that was my next step of, okay, now we're cruising.
Did you notice when the angel put you back in your body or put her hands on your chest that you woke up with a level of feeling better?
In the body was still painful, not excruciating. It was like two. Three to two.
Mm-hmm.
So and was quite uncomfortable still. But so that's the difference. A lot of times this is the thing that is so important in life is to wake up to there's like two lives going on here. One is that of the body itself. The body itself has an existence of its own and how it feels and thinks and wants and all of those kinds of things. And there is you as a soul that has had enormous, you know, experience and lifetimes of experience. And so there's a difference. This is the part where we're all human beings because we're all incarnated into these human body minds. And we live in this body. We live through this. And we have amazing, wonderful experiences called living in the physical world. And we get to experience things that if you were just spirit without this form, you can't really experience that. And there's no such thing in spirit as time or space. But once you're in a body, it's all about time and space.
Mm-hmm.
And so here I'm in this on 1 foot or maybe a foot and a half into a timelessness, spacelessness, you know, eternity, and the other half a foot is still in the body where, hey, if I don't get to the hospital in time, I might not make it.
There's a dimensionality involved there.
Yes.
But you are speaking about this as, and I've heard this throughout this conversation, that they're two separate things. That it seems like your body, you were separating from your body's pain.
Yes.
And you were in this state of bliss. Was that just so? Was that just the way that you were dealing with the pain?
Partly, as well as I was touching base. You know, it's like checking in at home when you're a kid. You know,
right?
Okay, hi mom. You know, I'm here and I'll be home. You know, by 7 o'clock or whatever. And so it's like that whole experience with the angel pushing me back. I fully was aware that it's not my time to cross over.
Mm.
And but, you know, it's, hey, here's a chance. I need a little recharge and I need to touch base. It's when that's not available in the world sometimes. You know, it's again tough when you're a very capable soul that comes into an incarnation, into a physical body, and you're a baby, and the way you are treated, even as much as your family loves you and your mother loves you and the everybody around you are really great people, but what is the level of the consciousness of the people around you that you're coming into? Do they actually see you as the soul that you are? Do they know that you are this tremendously capable, aware, conscious, feeling, sensitive being? And but once you come in, and of course, in the way that most births are done in hospitals and in kind of a somewhat chaotic and a lot of pain, especially if the mother's going through a lot of pain in the labor and all this, you know, stuff and cold and sounds and all that is pretty jarring.
This is the only country that treats a birth mother as a sick person in a hospital.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's a lot of changes happening in those regards too, but it's kind of slow. And but the consciousness is on, okay, yes, like you say, here's a problem, and let's not, you know, let's not lose the baby or the mother, instead of, welcome, you know, we've been waiting for you, here's a party, and welcome to the world. You know, it's kind of rough here at times, but we can still have a good time. And
rather than taking the baby and putting it in an incubator and testing
it. Exactly. And we recognize that you as a soul have been, you know, leaders and great heroes and tremendously intelligent and created all kinds of stuff in previous lifetimes and all that. We recognize you that you're a tremendous and complete being that may actually be more, you know, knowledgeable than I am. But at this point, I'll help you as best as I could. And that recognition isn't there to any really great degree.
It has gotten lost and separated in a way. When our baby was born, she was sitting there in a bowel movement, and the nurse still had to do a test to see if she had an anus. And it wasn't even, it was just procedure, because there's so much liability now that these hospitals incur. It's just procedure. And there's the intuition is almost completely have been deleted. But I want to go back to your experience. What, you know, the phrase that you've heard before, that there's a reason everything happens.
Yes.
What do you feel about that now?
Well, it's an ongoing process. You know, I had eventually got to the catheterization lab, and ultimately I had catheterization and a stent put in to one of my coronary arteries that was completely blocked by a blood clot. It was a very crucial situation, and it was an amazing experience to be there in the lab with the two doctors and a radiologist and a nurse, and they work like a total team. We had a lot of, you know, laughter in between things, and the doctor finished, and all of them stood there looking at the screen with the results. And it went so fast and so easy, and they just stood there and goes, wow, that was great. And the doctor says, that's by far the most perfect stent I've ever put in, if I may say so myself, and it's the most perfect one I've ever seen. It was so easy. And I was aware that everyone was a team, and not just on a physical level, but I was surrounded by healing masters. And surrounded by the by that point, you know, the word got out, and more people were starting to become aware that I was in crisis. And there were so many prayers and wonderful healing energy and thoughts and support, and it just grew, and it's just like floating through everything. Mm. And again, when you're in that stream of that oneness, everything goes. And even things that don't look correct, you know, like waiting an hour and 15 minutes for an ambulance to get there, on that surface, you know, some people might get irate and says, what kind of an emergency, you know, crew is this? You can't take that long. But no, everything was exactly the way it needed to be for me to be able to go through this correctly. So it's not, people shouldn't make this a rule. Oh, okay, let's wait 4 hours once you start having chest pain. Like you said, somebody called in. They're absolutely correct. You shouldn't wait. But for me, in this particular situation, it was important that I had to go with my own intuitive knowingness. I had to go with and trust 100% what I knew to be correct.
And at the same time, though, you have shown us through this example of how to reframe fear, how to reframe a hospital experience with humor. You know, you really have shared with us that there's ways to look at even the most catastrophic situations differently, and to see the amount of fear that comes from external sources that easily could be adopted by you or by anyone, and that there is an option to maintain your seniority and to transform that fear. Yeah. Humor is the first step, which you've clearly defined, and that the beautiful thing that you said about choosing life rather than being afraid of death is so clear and such a wonderful reminder, but very, very, very important reminder, especially coming from you, who, you know, a few weeks out of his very, very special 53rd birthday is here to share this with us. I want to give your website out so people are asking, who is this masked man on the phone here? This is Michael Tamura, T-A-M-U-R-A, and his website is michaeltamura, T-A-M-U-R-A.com. And I don't know if you want me to give out the phone number, but his email is on there. And I don't know if you're doing appointments these days. Are you for private?
I've cut back a lot and just kind of taking each day, you know, as it comes along,
yeah,
to see how well I do. Yes, they can get to us through the email, through the website very easily. And
there is no, what is the email on the website?
The website is the www.michaeltamura.com, and the email address is Tamuras, T-A-M-U-R-A-S, @ix.netcom, netcom.com.
Is that listed on your website?
Yes, it's once, it's, I don't know if it's listed, but once they get to our website, there's a place where they can email to us.
Oh, there's a contacts area. Okay,
yeah.
That's great. You're still doing your lectures and your apprentice program?
I had my first trial this past three-day weekend. I had 47 of my apprentices come up to Mount Shasta, and we had a absolutely magnificent three-day intensive.
It's.
And I survived.
Yeah.
That's
amazing to me.
That
is amazing to me. Just the apprentice program alone is such a valuable program. It's people who've been with Michael for the past several years learning techniques and so forth. It takes a while to learn this information because it's a process of unveiling or peeling the layers of the onion back of information that we have learned up to this point that prevents us from being able to be who we truly are and finding our own truth. So, Michael, I so deeply appreciate your sharing with me this afternoon. I let go of all journalistic responsibilities. I didn't want to get in the way. I wanted to hear you speak and offer the healing that you do so well to people who listen on the air and people who can have it.
Thank you so much, Lisa, and thank you for this opportunity to share with everybody. And I truly, truly thank all of those who have been great support and sending their prayers and love and communication. So thank you very much.
You are very welcome, and thank you. So once again, you can go to Michael's website, which is michaeltamura.com. If you want to email him, there's a contact place on there. A lot of people were calling and wanting to ask you questions, so we didn't get to calls. But it's wonderful, wonderful to have you on, and we will definitely speak again soon.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye, and that's it for me this afternoon. While I am committed to bringing you the clearest information possible, in the end, I always encourage you to listen to your own truth. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.